if like JJ, you and I were partners in crime and you're like, hey, you got to do a patriotic, you know, demonstration tomorrow. Be like, well, yeah, you, JJ. What'd you tell him that for?
Welcome to the What's Up Reddit podcast. We fashion ourselves cinematic judge and jury. My name is JJ Crowder. I'm here with my co-host, Matt Sennheiner. Little ASMR action. And Alec Burgess.
Let's get it.
what the fuck is Malik Matson doing action?
Are you about to say Malik? Is that like our celebrity like combo name?
Malik. I will touch you, Matson.
Malik.
There's no reason. We appreciate you tuning in. Go ahead and hit that follow, subscribe, like, bell notification buttons. Tell a friend about us. Tell someone that's been called into jury duty about us. Tell your family about us. Tell everybody about us. But, you know,
pinpoint those. Don't tell your mom about us. Don't tell my mom.
I was just say, depends on your mom. But, yeah, don't tell Mattson's mom. So with that, we're continuing our month of hidden gems. But before we dive into what's come second in March, let's talk about our sponsors. This episode is presented by Manscaped. And as always, top of the morning to you.
Manscaped.
Manscaped.
Top of the morning.
This episode is brought to you by the St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers at Manscaped and Mattson's psychosis.
Who hurt you, Mattson?
This year, don't chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in Below the Kilt Care.
Rainbows.
Say goodbye to your clover forest with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0. Here's an image of it. If you want to see it, go check us out on YouTube and let your confidence shine bright. Brace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Balls.
See, he does shit like that, but somehow I'm the crazy one.
Yeah. Go ahead, head over to manscaped.com and use code THEVERDICT for 20% off plus free shipping.
I like smooth balls.
That's going on TikTok.
Woo! Don't mind us. We're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs today, boys and girls. Yeah, so thank you, Manscaped. Much appreciated for your continued sponsorship of our episodes. We enjoy having you on. Go get their products, man.
Manscaped.
It's good stuff. And yeah, don't forget to get that 20%. I like all their stuff. I'll tell you, I just got one of the creams that I ordered. It's to make your balls feel smooth.
You gotta be careful with the cream though. Gotta make sure you don't put too, like, sometimes it can get you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't do it. Yeah, there's a little like ooh to it because it like burns a little if you got too close. But theirs is actually really nice. Yeah,
once you figure it out, it's quite nice. And if you're wondering, do the carpets match the drape? They did, but with Manscaped, they don't.
Yes, it's another short. This sponsorship has been the best thing that ever happened to Mattson's friggin' random shit. I love it. It was amazing, dude. I'm gonna just make you in charge of reading sponsorship shit because
I'm more than happy to. I just feel very passionate about this product, but our listeners are excited to hear this episode, JJ. So as much as I want to talk about Manscaped, should probably move on.
Yeah. Before we do though, just make sure you go get your 20% off and free shipping with code THEVERDICT, all one word, at manscaped.com. It's 20% off free shipping with the code THEVERDICT at manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make sure your little hairy leprechaun is luckier than ever with Manscaped. So like Mazza said, let's jump into the movie. Today we're reviewing as part of Hidden Gems, Runaway Jury. It was released October 17th, 2003. It was directed by Gary Fleeter. It was written by John Grisham, Brian Koppelman, and it stars John Cusack, Rachel Weisz, Gene Hackman, Dustin Hoffman, Bruce Davison, Bruce McGill, Jeremy Piven, and Nick Searcy. It is about a juror on the inside and a woman on the outside manipulating a court trial involving a major gun manufacturer. Yeah, can't wait to talk about this. Like, I got another John Cusack film on my list of movies for them to vote on, but if you can't tell, I like John Cusack quite a bit. And I'll tell you this, the reason that this one is a hidden gem for me is not because it's an unknown film. I mean, if you're a John Grisham fan, which for a time, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s, and even in the early 90s, there was a lot of John Grisham films being made. And most of them were very successful in the box office. They made a lot of money. They carried a lot. I mean, Matt Damon did one. I mean, there's a lot of John Grisham films out there that were very successful, but this one wasn't as successful. I'm pretty sure it didn't make any money from a budgetary perspective. I think its budget was somewhere around $60 million, if I remember right, and it didn't even make $50 million, which for me, like, the instant I watched it and I went and saw it in the theater because I like John Cusack and because I like John Grisham films and I love Gene Hackman and Dustin Hoffman's amazing. So I went and saw this going, this is a stacked cast and it's a John Grisham film. I loved it. It's not as action-packed as some of the John Grisham films, and it wasn't like, it's not as dialogue heavy as some of them where it's like this crazy stuff, but I think it was one that snuck in at a bad time in 2003 amongst some big movies, so it just was overshadowed, but I still think it's one of the better John Grisham adaptations that was made, and I think it tells a really interesting story, and I think it's relevant to our time now more than it even was in 2003. So yeah, that's why I picked it. That's why it's a hidden gem for me. I think more people should watch it. But
this spoke to me on a deep-seated level of corruption.
I bet it did.
That I loved. I love the fact that, and I don't know if this was intentional, but they kept showing, you know, justice, right? And justice is supposed to be blind, which is one of my favorite metaphors because of all the corruption that goes on. Mm-hmm. Justice can't see it. And so I wonder if that was put into play for a reason, because they kept showing justice blind. You have this idea of, you know, it's supposed to, you know, right always wins out. But then on the back end, you have all this stacking the jury. There's science, there's algorithms behind it. You have this, these payouts going out because it's more important to win the case than it is about doing the right thing. And I loved that whole little underhanded scheming thing. But it does kind of make me regret, you know, avoiding every single jury summons I've ever had. I didn't know I could get money out of it.
I mean, not a lot. I love that line, too, where he's like, we're not here for $14 a day and a whole fresh bag cooked lunch. Meal. Yeah, bag lunch, something like that. Yeah, this
jury can be bought for $16 a day and a bag lunch.
That's right. That's right. I like it. I'm with you. And I knew you'd like it for the reasons that it does highlight how corruptible a supposed incorruptible process really is. Like, and it's also one of those things where there's another line in it, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but it's Gene Hackman talking, and he's like, you know, all of a sudden you put somebody on a jury and they become, you know, magnanimous or whatever, you know what I mean? It's like, it's different the way that they think they can solve the world's problems, but at the same time, like, we all have our things that if you apply enough pressure. So I often wonder, and then, you know, this is an allegory or a story that talks about the fact that this happens, but, and it seems extreme with Gene Hackman's team, and they've taken over the back room in this old pawn shop, and they have the computer set up and they're hacking people and they're, but I wonder, because there are jury consultants like that, this is a real fucking profession. So you have to wonder, like, how much of this is actually real, and maybe not the intimidation factor or, you know, the blackmailing or the threats and things like that. And I'm sure there's some of that too. I mean, we know, especially back in the day, the old mafia stuff, like, they used to do that all the time. But the question is, how much of, like, what we saw with Gene Hackman's group could be true, right? Like, how deep does the studying of a jurist go in the moment of a major trial? I can't imagine it goes deep in a minor trial, but a trial that's millions and millions of dollars like this, or even hundreds of millions of dollars on a major player in political, you know, the gun manufacturers, things like that. Like, that's a huge player in lobbying, in all sorts of things. So, I mean, there's a lot to lose And they point that out very well in this movie, too. Like, if you lose once,
you're going to lose a lot.
Setting a precedent is dangerous in the world of law. And so I'm always very intrigued by how much is fabricated versus how much is comparatively true. So, and this movie does a great job of showing, like, geez, I want to be a juror now. Like, I watch this movie and I'm like, man, next time I get a jury summons, I'm actually going to go and I'm not going to answer the questions incorrectly so as not to be on jury. Like, I think it'd be interesting to do once in my life, you know, to be on an actual jury. But then you start thinking, I don't know if I want to be on a high profile case like that, because I got some skeletons.
One thing, yeah, that I think is interesting, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole after watching this, is that whole jury consultant concept. While it's not illegal, what is difficult is in the legal system. Basically, what it's saying is, we saw it in this movie, you had some wealthy defendants that, I mean, they had the gun. It was interesting to hear the gun industry then. They were saying like $2 billion is what, like, the total addressable market. And I'm sure now it's, I mean, I can't even imagine how much money it is now.
Yeah.
So all that to say, these dudes had money, and they had a lot of money, and they were paying a lot of money to make things happen. And so I was just trying to look up some things in relation to this about it. Has there been controversy in terms of, like, what you see in this movie? And if that has actually happened, nothing has been exposed, nearly nothing has come close to the level of what this movie has showed, just to be frank. And if it did, I think there would be, I mean, honestly, I think it would really cripple the United States judicial system. There would be some serious issues. And I'm not saying that it hasn't happened. I'm just saying if it got caught, that would be a massive problem. Granted, there's probably other areas that were already compromised in some ways. With that being said, though, you take like OJ's trial in 1995, both parties hired a jury consultant, like a team of them. And what one of the defendant's team actually did, they set up a whole mock trial and ran strategies based off some of the jury that they were thinking of picking, and did expensive interviews to get public, like, opinion to understand how that they were going to present that case. And then in Michael Jackson's case in like 2005, the jury consultants then for him created a 300-page survey to screen potential jurors, which they showed a little bit in this particular movie with that survey. But imagine, I mean, that's like taking like a small form of the SAT or something, like, and one of those, our listeners don't know this, but JJ does like corporate training and deals with a lot of some of these things. And I mean, in a way, they're trying to do those like behavioral tests that a lot of like corporate America takes to understand, like, what personality am I? Who do I work with? How do I interact? And they're essentially doing it. So what gets difficult is, if you have the money, you're basically saying, I'm going to increase my chances by X, Y, and Z. And it's hard for, obviously, individuals that can't do that. Their chances of kind of gaming the system a little bit, they just don't have those resources. And that's where it can become difficult, where the other side of that equation in terms of the courtroom, if they don't have that, can't deploy it, like, you're kind of up a creek without a paddle. And so there's that discrepancy a little bit.
Let's bring back trial by combat. I like that. Yeah. If God deems that you're worthy, you'll win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think the other piece that I love about this movie is it's one of these movies that you're just intense. Like, it makes me uncomfortable in the most positive way, right? Like, it brings so much subtle tension. Because, and it ramps it up throughout the movie, right? At first you're like, what's going on here? Like, he wants, and the way they introduce Rachel Weisz's character to, like, Marley, to, you know, it's almost like they're randomly meeting in a shop as he's buying a candle, and then you find out they're together. And so, like, I love the build up and the way that this movie progresses, because you don't always know, you know, just enough to know they're trying to sway this jury. And then watching the tack that John Cusack uses, his character uses to do that, right? Like, the threats of Marley saying, we're going to watch what happens. You're feeling patriotic, like, just showing that you can influence this group of people just enough to show that you can actually get a verdict the way that you want it and create enough doubt and panic. It's almost like a reverse trial, right? Like the whole idea for a defense lawyer in this situation would be to create reasonable doubt, right? And the whole idea behind a prosecutor is to show that this happened without reasonable doubt. So there's no, it's fact, right? And you watch this reverse where Nicholas Easter's creating reasonable doubt just enough with these lawyers and these legal teams to go, the only choice, I mean, even Rohr, who's like this upstanding lawyer who's trying to do the right thing in all things, like goes to his people, his partners, and asks for the 20 million or the 10 million, right? So it's like that much reasonable doubt, who can be bought, who can't, who can be influenced. Like, I just love the subtle tactics that I'm, you know, he watches, and that's one of my favorite parts of the movie, even though it, and it happens all the time, but it's very subtle, is watching John Cusack's character just watching the jury, like watching the woman as she pours alcohol in her coffee, watching the grumpy, like the angry Marine guy that, like, at the end we find out his whole reasoning for not wanting to find for the defendant or for the plaintiff is that he doesn't want to give her money that he feels he deserves. And I get that. Like, I think we can all relate to that to a certain degree, right? Why should she get it versus me? So all of the, just the subtle storylines and the intricacies that ramp up and get more and more tense. And you're like, how's this going to play out? How's this going to go? Are they actually going to flip it? Is he able to overcome all this stuff? Like, I'm just tense from even in any one I rewatch it. I'm like, oh God, I can just feel the tension, which I love about this movie. For me, that's this constant feeling of like, ooh, we're going to get there. This is great.
I love the twist, that little twist that they have in there, because I know, JJ, you're very good at finding twists.
Yeah,
I am not. And this one I got to like 65% of before it happened. And so it was when the guy was talking to the professor, right? Mm-hmm, and talks about the fact that, oh, yeah, you know, kind of the purpose of the law got pushed out of John Cusack's character, Jeff Kerr, Nicholas Easter, whoever he is, got pushed out of his mind. He kind of got this more jaded feel. And I was like, revenge mission. Because up to that point, you kind of had this feeling that they're a con couple.
Yeah.
Right. They go from town to town to town, scamming out lawyers in cases because they're able to swing the jury very convincingly. If, like, JJ, you and I were partners in crime and you're like, hey, you got to do a patriotic, demonstration tomorrow. Be like, well, fuck you, JJ. What'd you tell them that for?
Yeah.
Because they'd be able to pull it off and have that kind of sequence going. I was like, oh, this is cool. But it makes that feel of these guys have been running cons for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And then that twist at the end that, oh, no, they're just kind of out for one dude. I was like, I almost said it.
Yep. Well, and to your point, like, that's how he sells it, too. Like, when he meets with Gene Hackman's character at that water fountain, like, he's like, you guys are getting paid. Why can't we? Right. So he leans into that. We're just using this as our niche to make money and to get our bit. Right. Which I loved. But yeah, that's, I'm with you. It's so interesting. And I think that's why this movie is so underrated, is like it's a nuanced movie. Like, you have to pay attention to what's going on around you in this film to start to piece it together and for it all to make sense. But I do love that moment too. Like, it's one of my favorite moments in this movie is the end when the guy they send out, and he's been different houses and families, and some get mad at him and some tell him all about it. And it's this interesting story that's got different points to it. But when he gets to the mom's house and she's recounting this story, like, you can see this feeling in his, he's kind of got, and he does it. The actor there does a great job of like, this is a terrible story, but this is working against us. And I'm figuring out why they're doing this versus it's not about money. Like, this is a setup and this is why. And so he's kind of got at the beginning of the story, he's like, oh, this is a terrible story. And then he goes to, oh fuck, we're screwed. And then he's looking at her like, shut the fuck up, I gotta go make a phone call. Yeah. And so I like that part quite a bit.
Bringing it back to historical stuff, I was just thinking about, like, has there really been jury tampering like this that we've seen? Not many accounts of that. Like, in 1982 with famous mob boss John Gotti. An investigation later revealed that they had bribed one of the jurors to vote for a not guilty verdict, which initially it did come through, and then they were able to find that after the fact that I think things got reversed. And then in 2013, a juror in a drug trafficking trial in New York City was found guilty of bribery and obstruction of justice for trying to negotiate a not guilty vote for only $5,000, which I thought it would have been a lot more than that, but small
don't potatoes. Get out of bed for jury duty for less than $5,000.
I know, but yeah, overall though, it sounds like, because one of the things I on these more high profile cases and such, one of the things I think this movie showed things were kind of loose in my opinion was the jury like being guarded by the cops and such, like keeping things sequestered. I mean, I don't know much about it, but I would imagine it's much more difficult to get access to jury members or see them in public or those things than this movie probably makes it out to be.
Yeah, I remember every time I watch this movie, like I get really into like trial stuff. And now you can watch trials almost every day on YouTube, on different channels, things like that. They're almost all public at this point, at least the major high profile ones. Right. And so I always get really into it after I watch this, but to your point, that's anytime a jury's been sequestered, like it's no fucking joke. Like they can't watch TV. They can't listen to radio. They can't do any of that stuff. Whereas most of them, if they're not sequestered, they just get advised by the judge. Don't read anything about the trial. Don't watch any news or anything like that, because they don't want that their judgment to be influenced by anything outside sources. But the sequestering, like they purposefully, like wherever they put them up in the hotels, they cut off the ability to watch those things or listen to those things to keep it. And then they do round the clock guards, like it's impossible. So it's a good point. Like the fact that that's the one part that I'm always like, he probably wouldn't sneak out that easy. Like walks out on the balcony, hops on the roof and away he goes. I mean, you need it for the story, right? But it's not going to be that easy for him to get off
that. It's too easy. And then the other suspension of disbelief, the how easily they're able to track the phone calls. I'm like, no, they did it like instantaneously. I'm like, no, that's just not, no, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
At least back then, maybe now, but not then.
Well, and even now you can't like, you can trace like which phone they're like, if they were to use, I mean, there's pay phones are not, aren't really a thing anymore, but like a pay phone, they can track that quick to the exact pay phone. Cause it's on a public string, but a cell phone, they can only track it within a certain amount of space and they can track it almost instantly, but it's still like within a quarter mile radius because it's pinging off the tower, which could be any number of series of space. So yeah, for them to be like right there, like you're like, wait, what?
Like, so yeah, but I think those are some of the only nitpicky things that I can think about, because otherwise, I mean, this movie's well acted. I think that's one of my favorite things. Really good actors, but doing a really good job of acting, and so the writing is high quality. I think when I think of most scenes in this movie, I mean, you've got you get worried about that his girlfriend's going to get killed. I mean, you're worried that you're wondering what that Frank guy's going to do to John Cusack's character in the hallway. You're like, wow, they do just a really good job of, and then Gene Hackman's character make him feel really sinister. And even the gun guys, for instance, just the tension all around, like very, very well done. It keeps you on the edge of your seat pretty significantly, I would say.
I think Gene Hackman's the standout for me. I mean, John Cusack's obviously like the guy in this movie, he and Rachel Weisz, but Gene Hackman really stands out to me. To your point, like he just is an asshole and you're like, he's very good at what he does, but you're just like, you just don't like him. You don't know what he's willing to do, except that he's willing to do pretty much anything. And I do love the line too, though, when Rachel Weisz character, when Marley calls him after she's been attacked and she's like, your man won't be walking, coming home, at least not walking home anytime soon, because she stabbed him in the leg with that piece of wood. Like, I love that part. But I think to what you were talking about, Mattson, the dialogue in this is, and a lot of it comes directly from the John Grisham novel. So it's, you can.
What does Gene Hackman's character say at the end of the movie in the bar? He, when they're walking out of the bar, he yells like, "And you won't be. How can you stop? Like, no one will remember you." What does he say? I kept trying.
He's calling them out for being money grabbers. So yeah, he still hasn't gotten the fact that this was just a revenge job on him for the one case back in Gardner, Indiana. He thinks they're that traveling con couple doing this.
But the way he said it, though, he basically said something like, no, like, what will you do if you don't have this? He said something like that because he was talking when he said it. He was saying it about himself because now he doesn't. He's done. He's got nothing. And there was a scene earlier in the movie when him and John Cusack are talking and he's like, you're going to have nothing. Like, you have nobody. And then now that that's taken from him, he literally has no identity. He may have a lot of money, but he's got nothing to show for it besides that. And that really resonated with me at the end. I think this movie kept me emotionally involved. And I felt that when his character. So I was like, oh yeah, like, damn, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's saying to them, you've been doing this for so long and now you've been successful and you've tasted success. How are you going to not continue to do it? Like, you can't escape it. And it's a direct correlation to himself. Like, I imagine when he's screaming that, like, he never went into it to become what he is, but what he's become, but he was doing it to make money because he was good at reading people and he had a good understanding of swaying a jury through slightly nefarious reasons. And then he probably got worse as it went on because he had to win, right? And so to me, to your point, I get exactly what you're saying. Like, that's what I catch every time too, is that he's like, you're going to be me. You can't just walk away from this. Like, what are you going to do now? But that's the difference between, like, he went down there and who he was and who they are. They're done. And you can tell. I love the line too, right after that, when they're standing there watching the kids and she just says, I just want to go home. Because I can't imagine, like, how exhausted they have to be traveling to city, trying to get in on these gun cases. One, it's not like these cases come up all the time. Two, like, so you got to be watching it. But it's the amount of deception and subterfuge that you got to play to be able to get in on the jury and all that stuff. Like, it's crazy to me. So, but yeah, it's such a great scene.
We're living that crappy house.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, the other piece of this that I always think about is, and I don't think comes up because by the end, you're like, oh, look, it's the happy ending. This is the best that could have happened. But much like you've mentioned, Mattson, where it almost always, if there's jury tampering or there's an issue with the jury, it almost always comes up because you got 11 other people that you got to have keep their pie hole shut for you to not get caught. Because the other problem that we don't think about is, if anybody finds out that this jury was tampered with, and not only do you have 11 other people that are looking at this going, Nicholas Easter was a little weird and he influenced the judge. Now, I do like that he admits at the end, he's look, I've always had an agenda. Like, I've been in the plaintiff's pocket this whole time, but I want to discuss the facts. And he lets them make their own decision based on reviewing jury, reviewing testimony, things like that. But at the end of the day, like, if one of the lawyers were to come out and say anything, that trial would be declared a mistrial, would come back. All of that decision goes away. The $20 million, $10 million, whatever it is that they get, $15 million that they're going to give to those families, that's still there because that wasn't part of the trial. But at the same time, like, that would be my big fear of this situation. Yes, you're doing a good thing, and depending on your point of view. But if it were ever to be found out, all that work you just did is gone. It's ruined, except for, I guess, the $15 million. But you just messed up this lady's life. The lawyers are going to be implicated in, at least the prosecuting or the defense lawyer is going to be implicated because he knew that it was going on to some level. So that's the flip side that never gets talked about in this movie. But, like, what happens if it gets found out? Because then that ruins everything you just did and however many years of their lives they've been trying to make that happen.
I don't know if it would, because he was pretty good at covering his tracks.
Yeah.
Like, the only person I'd be worried about on that jury would be Frank Herrera.
Yeah.
But then again, I would also kind of, you'd be gambling against his Marine Corps, drill and sergeant, drill instructor, whatever it is in the Corps, attitude.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm sure that outburst that he has, right? didn't sit well with him. He got coaxed into it, and that's what sold the jury on it.
Yeah.
So it'd be 1 against 11 if he speaks out. And yeah. it would be taken as, oh, well, you're the gun nut, right? Yeah. Of course you're upset because the jury voted 11-1. You were the one. Like nothing can really get traced back to John Cusack because he operated through everybody else.
It's true. I do love that scene when he gets him to lose his shit just to get the jury not wanting to vote, not wanting to rush it, but to actually. So he shames this guy, and rightly so, right? Because it's mm-hmm. a terrible reason that he was making his decision, but like shames this dude and then says, look, I just want everybody to do this right. And I love that. Like, and the fact that he's able to tell Rankin, like tell Fitch at the end, he's like, I didn't do anything. I just gave him the facts and let him vote their heart. And I was like, that's cool. Cause that's what the process should be, right? Is you sit through the trial, you listen to the testimony, you then it gives to you as a jury. And then you review the testimony, you review the facts of the case, discuss it and make a decision based on everything that was presented to you as fact or conjecture or whatever it was, throw everything else out that shouldn't be there, make a decision. And I often wonder, so I was watching, we talked about it on this podcast a little bit, like the Johnny Depp trial. I've watched a number of other trials online, and I often look at the jury and I'm like, I wonder what those discussions are like, right? And then I love when some of the jurists decide they're going to let themselves be interviewed and they talk about what they did. And so it's always interesting to hear, like, yeah, we reviewed this testimony. This is what we all thought. Like, this is the kind of the judgment we came to. I was like, wow, that's cool. So I think to me, I don't know that I would actually want to be on a jury because especially for a very long trial, like I'd be like, oh God, I got to sit and listen to this shit again. But I would be very interested in the conversations in the jury room. You know what I mean? Like the deliberation of the facts and the discussing what I thought and believed and like hearing other people's opinions. That part to me would be fun as fuck. Like I would be very intrigued by those conversations. I mean, that's part of the reason I enjoy these podcasts is the discussion of opinions and thoughts. But I think sitting through the trial, I would be like, fuck, I'm bored. It sounds like
a great concept to be away from work. But then if you're sequestered and you can't do anything, then it just would blow.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be hard.
It'd get old real quick.
Yeah. Well, and then watching the trials on through YouTube or wherever I'm watching them, like, sometimes I'm watching testimony and I'm like, Jesus Christ, if they say objection one more time, I'm going to fucking lose my shit. And there was one is like objection, hearsay. And I get it. It is hearsay. And you need to make sure that shit doesn't go in as fact or gets, you know, as part of the trial. But I was like, oh my God. Like I just, the repetitive nature of some of the testimony, they asked the same question like 19 different ways to try. And I'm like, I get what you're trying to do, but I'd be like, just fucking move on. Like, you're not going to get it. I'd have a hard time not being biased by a lawyer that annoyed me. You know what I mean?
Anyway. I think it'd be fun to be on a jury. I would be a terrible juror though.
I don't think you'd ever get picked.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
But it'd be fun.
I have a strong feeling you're not getting picked. Just throwing that out there.
Just for funsies.
I probably wouldn't get picked for many things. The most likely to get picked is JJ.
That's probably fair. There's no reason. I'm not a true nihilist, but I'm about as close as I think it gets on this podcast. But
I was going to say something. One of the things that, and hopefully this comes back to me because I had two things I wanted to talk about. I can't remember anymore. It's going to come to me again. I had two things that I wanted to say.
I thought I smelled something burning over there.
Someone keep talking. It'll come to me.
Yeah. I think kind of also to build on what Max was talking about is the acting in this. The story's good. It's interesting. It's different. But I think the acting, without the acting, especially from the four major players, right? Dustin Hoffman, Gene Hackman, Rachel Weisz, and John Cusack. But then you have some subtle performance, like Jeremy Piven, who's typically a comedic actor, and he does a lot with John Cusack, so it was really not surprising to see him in this. But him as the other side of the jury, you know, piece of this, the not well-connected, well-funded, he's just a psychology major that wants to be part of this system and help people understand what a jury, what makes a jury tick. Like, I enjoy his performance. It's very subtle. The mom in it's very good. There's just a lot of really great performance. Most of the jury pool, very good performances within the blind guy. I love that guy. I love Frank. So I just think, to your point, like, for such a movie with such a strong cast, I still, it amazes me that it's flown under the radar the way that it has.
You know, just when you say about the other jury consultant, I actually thought that I wish I would have had a little bit more. And that's one of the things from the other side. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of that dynamic. And that's honestly one of the main things about this movie that detracts me from giving it like an exceptional ratings. I, now having seen that, I would have loved a little bit more of that juxtaposition between both the super money, like secretive, like almost kind of illegal style from Hackman's character versus the other individual that, like you just said, didn't have those resources, but was really smart, had that degree. I think that a bit could have been a really cool dynamic if they had leaned into it just a little bit more.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially because I liked Jeremy Piven hit that character. I liked the way he played that character.
Yeah.
It was interesting. So yeah, I think a little more of him would have been,
because it's funny as you brought it up, but it was, as I think about watching the movie again towards the end, I was like, oh yeah, they didn't, like, that became less of a thing towards the end. I was like, wow, it could have been a little bit more. And I think it could have been an interesting dimension, because they had that spot where he went to the mailbox and saw that they had come out and torched the place. And I would have liked a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. Do you remember what you were thinking?
I didn't.
Okay. Well, you can bring it up at another time. We'll do it. You can do a what's our verdict 60-second hit on it. Let's rate this thing. It's my movie, so I'll rate it first. Look, I'm giving this a 5. I think there are some little things that I could say I wish had been, like we talked about Jeremy Piven, I wish there'd been a little bit more of his character. But at the end of the day, I'm never displeased or sad about watching this movie. Like, in fact, I got really excited. I haven't watched it in a very long time. And so as I was like, you know what I'm going to put on this list for hidden gems is Runaway Jury, because it doesn't get the credit I think it should. And it's probably the least watched of all, like, the John Grisham adaptations, and as far as I'm aware. And I just think it needs more highlighting. And so I was really excited to watch it again. And Casey watched it with me. It was just like, it's one of those movies that a lot of times I'll find myself in movies that I've rewatched a lot, like getting tired. And I'm like, okay, I'm sleepy and maybe we should do something in between. This is one that I don't, like, I'm wide awake. I'm intrigued. I'm watching for the nuanced performances and the different lines. And I catch new things about each character every time I watch it. And like, I just really love this movie. It's one of my favorites out there. It's one that I think should, again, have more people watch it. So go watch this movie. I think you'll like it. John Cusack, this is one of his best performances, in my opinion. And I love John Cusack in almost everything that he's done. So this one being up there near the top for me. But great movie. Giving it a 5. Love it. All right, Mattson.
4.5 for me. I think I just gave my reason right before. That was really the only piece. If they had done that, I just wanted a little bit more. But other than that, I really have nothing bad to say. This, I've already said it, well acted, suspenseful, interesting subject matter, great story. Just like Jay just said, an underrated movie I'd never heard of, hadn't seen, and has given me a lot to think about after the fact, and is something that I intend to watch again.
Nice. All right, Alec.
A movie about the corrupt judicial system? That's going to be a 5er, dude. All day, air day.
Love it. I knew you'd like it. If there's no other reason than that right there. 5 and a 4.5. I love it. Alec, had you seen this before?
I'd seen parts of it. So I caught it on cable. But since I didn't know what was going on, I clicked off of it. If I'd known, I would have stayed on.
Right? That's what I'm talking about, though. Like, it's one of those that people see and they're like, eh, I don't know what this is, and they switch off of it. So, and it was in that time frame where it was hard. Well, it's still hard.
There's a lot of suspect movies around that time frame that I stay away from, surely.
Sure, for sure. Cool, cool. That's another win in the bucket for hidden gems, I think. So, Matt's or yeah, Alex,
more so than last week's movie.
Oh my gosh!
Or maybe next week's movie, depending on when that one drops.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think maybe one of the categories should be John Grisham adaptations, and ooh, we can throw the rest on there. Christmas with the Cranks. I was thinking more like A Time to Kill or The Client, but
yeah. I've seen most of those too. But
even The Pelican Brief, The Rainmaker, like there's a lot of good ones out there. But Christmas,
with but you went with Christmas with the Cranks. Nice job, man.
I like that movie.
Yeah, I like that movie too.
It's the only one I probably watch like essentially every year.
It's a good one, but there's a lot like.
I'm not saying it's a great movie, but it's a movie that is in my holiday rotation. Free Frosty. I
love it. All right, Alec, tell everybody where they can find us.
Happy to, JJ. Thank you for tuning in to week two of Hidden Gems. Great pick from JJ with Runaway Jury. I will say it was a little misleading. I thought we were going to have a little bit of a jury on a lamb, but, you know, this is probably a much better story, so I'll take it from there. Special shout out to our patron, Challenge Accepted, for the pick. Thank you very much, Charles. This was an amazing watch, so thank you for putting that on the list. And another special shout out to our other patrons, Will Carlson and Richard, who weren't on this list of movies, but they're on the next one, which I'm excited for. Next month's going to be great. We are dropping episodes still every Monday on YouTube, so that's where you can find us. Hit that like or subscribe button so you can keep notified of all of our new content. If you want to get involved in the voting process to torture Mattson for no other reason, Patreon is a place to do so. So you can get in on all of our picks and our category selections. JJ is going to be putting out a post here pretty soon for our next batch of months. With that, I will kick it back to our Colossus of Clout, the Maharaja of MASH, a JJ.
So I have another great idea to torture you. 1 month of our favorite subtitled movie.
Oh, fuck.
I've already put them all on the list.
It's a good thing I run the Patreon because that shit ain't going on there. I'd do foreign films as long as they're not subtitled. How about that? Oh, God, I hate subtitled movies. They're not that they're bad. I just hate them myself. It's a personal problem. And with that, as always, we appreciate you tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
Whoa! Bye. Hasta la vista, baby.
Cinemagica.